Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Did you know that the most important human invention was gynecology? Not fire, not stone tools, not the wheel, not penicillin, gynecology. What about the fact that humans are not the only species to have abortions? Or that female bodies are probably what led the way to bipedalism? This is just some of what you'll learn when you read Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution by Kat Bohannon. For the last 2,000 years, the story of humanity has been written mostly by men about men. What's more, for over a century, the female body has been drastically left out of biological and medical research. That's slowly starting to change, and what we're learning about the biology of sex differences is rewriting the story of humanity and the story of our bodies, what they really are, how they really work, and where they really come from. Even though we're just starting to scratch the surface of that story, the story itself is 200 million years old. Eve is that story. This book is so fascinating. It's also engaging, easy to follow, and often hilarious. So it's no surprise that it was an instant New York Times bestseller and that it's been longlisted for the Women's Prize for Nonfiction. We also love that Eve is inclusive of trans identities, which is sadly still not the norm for these types of books. So if you've ever wondered why women outlive men or whether or not we evolved to be sexist, you're going to want to check out Eve by Kat Bohannon. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode. I'm introducing a new segment I'm going to call Renee's Review Corner. It'll be like the New York Times review section, but like less pompous and probably more cursing. So I'm Renee. My pronouns are she, her, and I am coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And today I want to tell you my thoughts on Amanda Montell's new book, The Age of Magical Overthinking, Notes on Modern Irrationality, which is out now from Simon & Schuster. And big thank you to Simon & Schuster for sending a copy my way. You may recognize Amanda Montell's name from our previous book of the month, Word Slut, and her bestseller, Cultish. Amanda is one of my autobuy authors, and, you know, I may have once proposed to her because I think we could easily fall in love, but I will try to keep this review as unbiased as possible as, you know, a book professional. The Age of Magical Overthinking is a blend of personal narrative and an exploration of logical fallacies and biases. And as usual, the author brings her signature humor and charm to the writing, easily breaking down difficult topics to make them digestible, turning them into entertaining tidbits that'll give you a major case of did you knows. And that's what I call when a book I read makes me say, did you know, insert random fact that no one cares for or asked for. Yeah, I am a delight at dinner parties, obviously. And because I have a huge crush on Amanda, of course I also loved the personal details, particularly the story of when she took shrooms and went to a dinosaur exhibit to experience the feeling of awe. I love that. And I loved hearing about her time as a beauty editor for an online magazine. Amanda is nothing if not relatable. Theater kids recognize theater kids. So her personal examples of how we all fall prey to logical fallacies were really familiar. And I'm always excited to see someone take on culty behavior to take it to task. She does this in a number of ways, particularly by illustrating how rampant misinformation and disinformation during the height of the pandemic was really an unsurprising result of certain cognitive biases. Linguists and sociologists were likely not surprised at all. If we were paying attention, this shouldn't have come as a surprise. Now, as a former public speaking instructor who taught logical fallacies, I do wish that I had had this book when I was still in the classroom. Being able to point to some of the slippery slopes Amanda brings up in a funny, relatable way would have gone a long way for my students instead of me just pulling them out of thin air, which was always a crapshoot. Then again, I am also endlessly grateful that I'm no longer teaching because I can't imagine trying to teach a public speaking course in a hybrid setting these days, which I know many of them have turned to that. Now, all that aside, I do feel like the book loses sight of the ball from time to time. As I was thinking about recording this review, I was having a hard time constructing what this book is even about. And I think therein lies the rub. And I'm not sure Amanda, her editor, her publisher, her publicist really know what it's about. It's great, but it's disjointed. It's organized. It's well written. It's entertaining. But is there a central thesis? I'm not sure. The only central thesis I can come up with is we're all kind of fucked up and we're all doing the best we can. And maybe social science can explain most of the reasons why, but it won't make us feel any better. This book is not perfect, but for a certain breed of anxious millennials, that's the exact central thesis we've been craving. I felt seen in this book. It's not going to help us curb our overthinking, but it might make us feel a little less alone.
What would you do? Kira's entire reputation is built upon the development of ethical computing. Her AI, Ellie, is the testbed and best example of using her moral operating system. Her absolute dedication to improving kids' lives could now put all she's worked for at risk. Kira thought she and Ellie, with her ethical framework, could keep everything under control. Against conventional wisdom, it's not the AI's moral decision-making that's the problem, it's the people. This is the setup for Moral Code by Lois and Ross Melbourne, a science fiction novel that explores themes of corporate ethics, exploitation, and the intersection of innovation and morality. When Dr. Kira Stetson merges her company with billionaire Roy Brandt's secretive nanite technology, she finally has access to some much-needed funds. Kira's decision to embed her moral operating system into Brandt's nanite smart dust reflects her commitment to ethical technology development. But it turns out, there's a reason his technology has been such a closely guarded secret. Now she must confront the sinister motives of corporate raiders and the military who seek to weaponize Brandt's nanites, posing a threat to both individuals and society at large. Moral Code asks the reader to consider important and interesting questions, ones that are particularly relevant right now with the rise of AI and the ever-growing greed of capitalist interests. Plus, we want to highlight that 100% of the proceeds generated through the sales of Moral Code will be donated to help fight the child abuse and human trafficking of kids. You can learn more about Moral Code and download a free chapter at moralcodethebook.com. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode.
Hey everyone, I'm Jordy and I use she, her pronouns. I'm here today to share with you a little bit about my experience driving across the country from San Francisco to Lyme, Connecticut. And in this discussion, I'm going to share with you about the bookstores that I stopped at along the way, more specifically along Highway 80, because that's what I took, so along the northern part of the U.S. I'll talk about the audiobooks that I listened to keep me company on my drive, and of course, the books that I picked up at the bookstore. So let's get into it. The reason that I was taking this drive to begin with is because one of my family friends needed some assistance taking her car and her two dogs from San Francisco to Connecticut, and unfortunately, she couldn't do it by herself, and there was no one really else to do it, and I have a pretty flexible and open schedule, so I hopped on the opportunity to do this trip because it's been on my bucket list for a really long time now, and I just don't know when I'll have the opportunity to do it again. So, as I said, I started off in San Francisco. I took a couple days out there to kind of do some sightseeing. Super pumped. I walked the Golden Gate Bridge. It was gorgeous. It makes me happy just reliving my memories of the experiences, but the first bookstore that I stopped at is called Book Passage. This bookstore is located in the ferry terminal, and for those of you who haven't been to San Francisco or don't know what I'm talking about, I took the ferry from Larkspur into, I guess, the actual San Francisco city proper. And when the ferry pulls up to the terminal, there's this beautiful building. And inside, there's a whole bunch of vendors that are selling local products and stuff like that. And me being me, I just so happened to notice the bookstore sign first, which was conveniently located next to a coffee shop. But obviously, I was going to stop by, see what they had to offer. And for the space that it wasn't too large. I would say it was about the size of a large room, maybe a little bit bigger. But they had a decent selection of almost any genre you were looking for, from children's books to YA, fantasy, romantasy, mystery, contemporary fiction, you name it, they had it. And I was kind of blown away. At this store, I picked up a copy of what I call romantasy, and I'm sure many of you also are aware of this, but it's a mix of fantasy and romance. The title of the book is called That Time I Got Drunk and Saved a Demon by Kimberly Lemming. This is the first book in the Mean Mishap series. And in kind of one sentence, a little bit about this book. Spice trader Cinnamon's serene existence is thrown into chaos when she unwittingly embarks on a perilous journey with a fiery demon in this spicy and quirky romance. Yes, I needed this book. For anyone who knows anything, love anything that's like remotely witchy, especially when it comes to romance books. Not sure what type of journey I'm going to go on with these two characters, but I'm excited to see where it goes. After I spent a decent amount of time at this bookstore, I walked, I think it was a little bit over a mile, might have been a mile and a half, not exactly sure. But the second bookstore I went to is called City Light Books, also in San Francisco. And side note, one thing that I learned about myself, so I grew up on the East Coast, and pretty much everybody I know is on the East Coast, and my entire life I have been told that I am a slow walker. And I learned that I'm just a slow walker according to East Coast standards. I feel like I fit in very well with people on the West Coast. We're not in too much of a rush to get anywhere, and we're enjoying the scenes. So I appreciated that. Anyway, I digress. So in City Light Books, every nook and cranny, every wall, any space that could possibly be occupied, including underneath the stairs, on the walls, you name it, books were stacked, piled. It was like book heaven. And I loved they had unique artwork hanging up. The floors, I am a sucker for, you know, those white and black tile checkered type pattern floors. Well, one of those was there at the bookstore, and I swear I stood in that room for like 5 minutes, just in awe. But at this store, there was a lot of books, like I just mentioned. Most of the genres catered toward contemporary fiction, poetry, and lots of nonfiction. All great genres, not necessarily what I gravitate toward. So I was a little disappointed when the romance, mystery, fantasy, and kind of YA sections were very limited compared to all the space that was there. But I can understand, because I think the audience and the people who frequent this store are looking for the other genres that I had mentioned that are prevalent there. But I didn't go home empty-handed. The first book I picked up was American Mermaid by Julia Langbein. And I'm also a sucker for anything that's got the word mermaid in it. This book is advertised as a sci-fi, feminist-lit thriller humor book, which already has me intrigued to see how all this kind of comes together. But in this book, broke English teacher Penelope Schliemann's feminist novel, American Mermaid, unexpectedly becomes a bestseller. But when pressured by Hollywood to sexualize her protagonist, she questions her sanity as strange events unfold, pondering whether her fictional mermaid has come to life to challenge societal norms in this hilarious yet profound exploration of identity and empowerment. The second book I picked up was actually a feminist book club pick. I just so happened to pick up my physical copy here. And that was the fantasy sci-fi book, Siren Queen by Neve Vaux. And if you aren't familiar with this book, in a pre-code Hollywood where monsters are real and magic saturates every aspect of life, Luli Wei, a Chinese-American girl from Hungarian Hill, navigates the treacherous movie business, determined to become a star on her own terms, even if it means embracing the darkness lurking behind the silver screen and becoming a monster herself. And the last book I picked up, this is a nonfiction, surprisingly, but it's not going to be surprising that the title is what captivated me to walk over to the shelf. The title is Witches, The Transformative Power of Women Working Together by Sam George Allen. This book celebrates the transformative power of female communities throughout history, from covens to girl bands, challenging societal myths of female isolation and competition, and highlighting how women working together have driven revolutions in culture, vocation, and support networks. All right, so after spending a couple days in San Fran, it was time for me and the two dogs to hit the open road, and by open road, Highway 80. And we drove from San Francisco, and our first stop or rest area was in Reno, Nevada. And on this leg of the drive, I listened to a book called Don't Want You Like a Best Friend by Emma Albin, which is a romance. And in this swoon-worthy debut queer Victorian romance, two debutantes, Beth and Gwen, set out to distract themselves from societal expectations by orchestrating a match between their widowed parents, only to find their own perfect match in each other, navigating unexpected feelings and the challenges of parent trapping along the way. So I tend to go into books kind of blind. Like, I'm a mood reader, so I'm like, okay, I'm feeling romance or I'm feeling mystery. And then I go to whatever books I have or, you know, on my Libby app to see what's out there. And I definitely judge a book by its cover. And so if a book kind of captivates me by the cover or if it's been recommended by a friend, I try to go in with kind of limited knowledge because I don't want to be too spoiled with what goes on. And this book came across as kind of like sapphic Bridgerton meets the movie Parent Trap, but instead of the two girls being sisters, they were like besties who ended up falling in love with each other and then trying to meddle with their parents getting together. I really enjoyed this book. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. It didn't get a full 5 from me. I think just because I had higher expectations for it and it didn't hook me as much as I wanted to be addicted to it in my drive. But it was very entertaining, very heartwarming, super spicy, depending on your spice levels. I loved it. Highly recommend it. In Reno, I visited Sundance Books and Music. And let me tell you, this bookstore was absolutely gorgeous. It was kind of strange seeing what I kind of picture in my mind to be a Victorian home in the desert. But it was this large Victorian-looking building that was renovated into a book/record store. And I was obsessed with all the different rooms, and each room kind of had its own genre, and there were so many books to choose from. They had so many little, you know, knick-knacky stuff, like bookish merchandise, and it was just so much fun. However, I was also let down a little bit by the romance, YA, and fantasy selections that they had, and this kind of just tended to be a slight theme with the bookstores that I went to. Needless to say, I did not have a hard time picking out a book to take home. This store had a mix of used books and new books, which was cool to see, but I did end up taking home The Secret of Heartwood Hall by Katie Lumsden, which is a mystery, and about this book. In 1852, Margaret Lennox, a young widow seeking refuge from her past, becomes a governess at the secluded Heartwood Hall in the west of England, where eerie occurrences, mysterious figures, and forbidden romance unravel the dark secrets hidden within its walls. Just yes to all of the above. Anything to do with like spooky houses, Victorian era type stuff, I'm here for. By the end of my first day out on the road, I ended up in the western area of Wyoming, and I was able to finish Don't Want You Like a Best Friend. So the next day when I hit the road, I put on Something Wilder by Christina Loren, which is a romance book. And in this book, we follow Lily Wilder, who reluctantly teams up with her former love, Leo Grady, on a treasure hunt through Utah's Red Rock Canyons, confronting their past and navigating complicated relationships as they risk their lives and hearts in pursuit of a legendary treasure. Now, when I think Christina Loren and I think romance books, thriller, murders, mayhem, all of that doesn't come to mind, and that's exactly what happened in this book. So it was a romance book that took me on a wild adventure, and I was so here for it. I give this book 5 stars. I also had this book on my TBR for the longest time, like since it came out a couple years ago, but I was just never in the mood for it. And I remember when I left Wyoming, I thought to myself, okay, for my next book, what should we do here? And I remembered this Something Wilder book, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that it's set somewhere out here. And it was true. It was set in, they mentioned some areas of Utah and Wyoming, and I'm pretty sure Montana. Don't hold me to that. I can't really remember, but there was a few states out in like the western area that they had mentioned. So it became this whole immersive experience, and I got hooked on trying to find books. Granted, all of the books that I listened to were fictional, but it was fun kind of immersing myself into a story that was set in the areas which I was driving through, so that just made the drive so much more fun. And as I'm looking at my notes here, this happened like the entire time. I don't know why I kind of confuse where all these states are. So the first day of my trip was from San Francisco, and then I stopped at the eastern part of Nevada. And then the second day I went from Nevada to Wyoming. So sorry if I just confused that whole thing up. But anyway, we continue on. The next stop that I had was in Salt Lake City, Utah. I went to this bookshop called the King's English Bookshop. The people of this town were so, so nice. The employees were so helpful at the bookstore. I was walking around and I asked one of the booksellers if she could point me into the direction of YA and romance, and she said to me, have no fear. I know exactly what you're looking for. And she took me to this corner of the bookstore, and she explained to me that they have this thing or this section called The Edge. And she said, it's like what you would expect to find in YA, but it has some adult themes that you wouldn't want your 14-year-old reading. And I said, yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I'm looking for. And this bookshop was super cute. It was set in a downtown area. It looked like, you know, how sometimes old homes get renovated into stores, and that's exactly what it was. I loved it. I finally came across a bookstore that had a really good selection of romance, YA, mystery, and everything else. Another thing just to point out about the people of this town, they were kind of asking me, because you know how when you check out bookstores, they ask about loyalty programs, your phone number, stuff like that. And I said, you know, oh, I'm just like passing through. And they asked me, like, oh, like, where are you going? Where are you coming from? And, you know, being a single woman out on the road, totally by myself in an area where I don't know people, I am usually pretty hesitant to kind of share information like that. Thank you, PTSD and anxiety. But I got really good vibes from these women. And so I kind of shared what I was doing. And they were so supportive and they were so nice about it. And it made me super excited to continue my journey. But at this bookstore, I picked up Red String Theory by Lauren Kung Jessen, which is a romance book. And in this enchanting tale of love and destiny, artist Rooney Zhao, guided by her belief in the red string of fate, finds herself at a crossroads when she meets Jack Liao, a skeptical yet perfect match as they navigate the twists of fate and their connection in the bustling streets of New York City. So the reason why I picked this one up is because, you know, when you're looking at books and if you want to turn them over to get the little synopsis on the back, typically, and I'm not sure if there's a word for this, I'm sure there is, but at the top, they'll highlight one sentence in bold that kind of gives you a really quick synopsis of what's going on. And when I saw that, you know, this main character, Rooney, said something about believes in Red String Theory that kind of ties our fates together, I was immediately hooked because it reminded me of the idea of these invisible strings that are around us. Cue Taylor Swift, if you know, you know. If you don't, highly recommend going to listen to that song, Invisible String. But I knew because of this, I had to read it, and I have high hopes for this one. All right, so now when I'm back on the road, going from where I was in Salt Lake City, driving, I ended up somewhere in Wyoming, but on the stretch, I listened to a book called Butcher and Blackbird by Bryn Weaver, which is a dark romance and a chilling tale spanning from small-town West Virginia to upscale California, and from downtown Boston to rural Texas. Rival murderers Sloan and Rowan forge an unlikely bond as they navigate an annual game of bloodshed and suffering against serial killers. But as their friendship evolves into something deeper, they must confront the haunting specters of their past before their newfound love is consumed by the restless ghosts they've left in their wake. Unbeknownst to me, but happy about it, this was another semi-immersive experience because Wyoming and Nebraska got a shout-out in this book. Also, this is a 5-star read I did not see coming. I had a couple people recommend this book to me, but in my dabblings of the dark romance genre, I just haven't found a love for it. Like, I know so many people love it, and I went into it wanting to fall in love with it as well. But something just clicked with this book. I think the way that the characters were written made them endearing in a way where they were funny and quirky and you liked them, because basically there are two people who go after really bad people, like pedophiles and serial rapists and killers and stuff like that, who do these heinous things. Like, I'm not saying murder is ever good, because it's not, but in the fictional world of dark romance, this made sense to me. Also, the audiobook was one of the best audiobooks I ever listened to, because so the book is told from both of their perspectives, Sloan's and Rowan's. And you know how typically if you have two narrators for the different perspectives, you get the entire chapter from the one person's perspective no matter what? Well, in this audiobook, if it was from Sloan's perspective, we would still hear Rowan when it was Rowan's dialogue, or if they were cutting each other off. You know how when they mention, you know, snickering in the background or mumbling and stuff like that, that was put into the book. So it wasn't a fully dramatized version of the book, but it was semi-dramatized, if that makes sense. But I highly recommend this audiobook if it's something you're into. But also be aware, this book came with a long list of trigger warnings. Given the nature of the dark romance and the killings and the things that were going on, it's definitely something that if you're sensitive to it, to definitely check out beforehand. But honestly, this is probably going to be one of my favorite reads of the year, and I can't wait for the sequel to come out this summer. So I didn't stop at any bookstores in Wyoming or Nebraska, just because given my cursory glance and quick Google search, I couldn't find anything that was not too far off the beaten path of Highway 80. And if I'm being honest, the drives were starting to get a little bit long. So I just wanted to, you know, get to my hotel room and just relax. But I will say I was super excited about driving through Nebraska on this trip because I don't know anybody from Nebraska. I've never been to Nebraska, and oddly enough, I've always wanted to drive through just to see it. So I was super excited about that. Also, like I previously mentioned, I'm an East Coast girly, But I'm also from the South, where it is flat and full of swamps and stuff, which can be beautiful in its own way sometimes. I love the beaches in Florida. But seeing the mountains, especially, I love the mountains in Utah. Those were my favorite. I feel like every time I see a mountain, I'm just in awe of how gorgeous it is. So if you're living out in the States where there's mountains, please don't take it for granted, because people like me just love to see it. The next part of my drive took me from Nebraska, and my final destination for this leg was going to be Chicago. And on this trip, I did stop at Reading in Public, which is in West Des Moines, Iowa. This is an Asian, woman-owned, and mostly operated bookstore and cafe in the historic Valley Junction. This was one of the most aesthetically pleasing stores, mainly because, so I can be a little dum-dum sometimes, and when I was driving around the downtown area, I had a hard time finding it, but that's on me. Hides me, I'm the problem. Anyway, walked into the store. I love it when stores have bold colors plus light colored wood to display stuff on. I don't know, I love it. And when you walk into the store, immediately that the back wall that you see, there's this in a huge neon sign that says Reading in Public. And I don't know, it was just so cool. This bookstore also had so many books and selections that were up my alley, so I was really excited about it. They had a good variety of contemporary fiction, romance, YA, mystery, horror, all of the things that I love. And this was probably one of my favorite bookstores to stop at just because of it, and because it was in this downtown area where it made it easier to walk around to other shops, and I was able to pick up stickers and postcards and all of the things, you know. At this store, I was influenced by one of the staff members to purchase Opium and Absinthe by Lydia Kang, which is a mystery. In 1899, New York City, fueled by the hysteria of her sister's mysterious death and Bram Stoker's new novel, Dracula, Tilly Pembroke, addicted to laudanum and obsessed with uncovering the truth, grapples with the blurred lines between reality and fiction as she investigates a series of vampiric murders, unsure of whom to trust in her search for answers. After I left the bookstore and this area in general, I started listening to The Mayor of Maxwell Street by Avery Cunningham. And like I mentioned before, I was really into this immersive experience. And this book is set mostly in Chicago, and it's a historical fiction. I got a little bit of romance, part thriller, and the synopsis goes like this. In the fiery heart of Prohibition-era Chicago, wealthy black debutante Nellie Sawyer teams up with speakeasy manager Jay Shorey to expose the underground crime syndicate led by the infamous Mayor of Maxwell Street as they navigate the perilous landscapes of racial prejudice, societal expectations, and illicit dealings while discover a love worth fighting for amidst the roaring 20s. Now, I'm not one who normally gravitates toward historical fiction, but this book just might change my mind when it comes to anything even remotely related to this. It was super engaging the entire time. Loved there were multiple relationships and kind of like side things going on. The mystery was really good. Seeing where Nellie was going, what was happening, the time period, everything. This book got 5 stars from me. I also timed the audiobook perfectly. So for, I believe this was the third day of my trip, from getting in the car to where I was supposed to end up at my hotel, the audiobook lasted from door to door, and I was really excited about that for some reason, but whatever. I also passed, when I was driving through Chicago, there was this huge sign on a building or an overpass that said Maxwell Street, and I started freaking out about it. I was like, oh my gosh, I know that thing now. So I was like fangirling over a street sign like a crazy person, but it's fine. It was fun. I also had every intention on stopping at a bookstore in Chicago the next day. However, having a car full of baggage, the two dogs, and trying to find a parking spot in a super busy city where I'd probably have to go to a parking garage, and I don't really trust parking garages all that much because, again, said anxiety, and I've had a car broken into, but that was in Boston. But either way, that whole thing sent my anxiety through the roof. So I was like, you know what, Chicago, I'll come back for you one day. So if you guys have any suggestions for good bookstores in Chicago, definitely let me know. To be honest, the second half of my journey from Chicago to Connecticut mostly consisted of podcasts and Fletcher's new album dropped. So I pretty much had that on a continuous loop from Ohio to Connecticut. But I did end up stopping at two more bookstores along the way, the first one being Brain Layer Books in South Bend, Indiana. Now, I can admit that sometimes I have my head in the clouds, and naive little me did not realize that South Bend was home to Notre Dame and numerous other universities. Like, I knew of these universities, but I didn't put one and one together to get to that it was South Bend. But anyway, the city was absolutely gorgeous. Loved it. I was able to actually walk the dogs in a park that was pretty nice. But yeah, I had a good time in South Bend. Brain Layer Books sits on the corner of what appeared to be a downtown area, but also residential. And again, the people that I met at this bookstore were super nice, super supportive, and I ended up getting a copy of Relit, 16 Latinx remixes of classic stories edited by Sandra Proudman. This is a short story collection that presents 16 original stories by Latinx YA authors, reimagining the classics, myths, and fairy tales with Latinx characters at the forefront, spanning genres from fantasy to sci-fi, offering empowering narratives that reflect the multi-layered Latinx experience. And one of my goals this year was to read more short stories, so I'm excited to dig into this one. And last but not least on my bookstore hopping journey was RJ Julia Booksellers in Madison, Connecticut. And this bookstore holds my heart in the palm of its hand. I used to live in Connecticut before moving back down to Florida. And this bookstore showed me what it meant to be an independent bookstore and the importance of shopping locally and kind of building a community of readers and people in an area. The books that they sell, the events that they put on are just always top notch, and the staff recommendations are always amazing. And I managed to snag a copy of I Feed Her to the Beast and The Beast Is Me by Jameson Shea, which is a YA mystery. In this story, perfectionist ballet dancer Lori Mesny strikes a deal with a pulsating river of blood in the catacombs of Paris, gaining primordial power to achieve stardom and vengeance in the elite world of ballet. But as she descends into madness and faces the consequences of her ruthless desires, she must confront the choice between seeking validation at any cost or embracing the darkness within, all while evading the god killer that hunts her down. All right, that is my long journey short. And if any of you have read these books that I have now stacked mile high on my TBR, or if you heard your favorite bookstore, or if you have bookstores that I didn't get to that definitely deserve a shout out, please let me know. And happy readings, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
Well-read woman is a